This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the show trainers listen to, and I think tonight you are going to see exactly why that is the case. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to once again be in the saddle with you for the next hour all across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming live or podcast on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, you know, for years when we have talked about 55-year-old Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen on our various shows and on our race broadcasts, we have mentioned the fact that only one trainer in the history of our sport has saddled more winners. That, of course, is the late Dale Baird. Well, as of 2:55 Eastern Time on Saturday afternoon, when Stellar Tap and jockey Ricardo Santana Jr. crossed the finish line 5 1/4 lengths in front in a maiden special weight race at Saratoga, that verbiage has now changed. No trainer in the history of thoroughbred racing has saddled more winners than Steve Asmussen. And Steve would be very quick to point out, and I know this because he has done it on multiple programs over the years, that his tremendous success would not be possible without his family and the team he has assembled around him. And that conversation begins with his longtime assistant trainer, Scott Blasi. The man who was born in Independence, Kansas, has worked alongside Steve for 2.5 decades and can now cherish every single moment of their remarkable feat. And Scott is indeed with me here today on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Scott, really do appreciate you taking some time, and congratulations, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just a remarkable accomplishment. Let's start by rewinding the clock to last week as you're continuing to edge closer to Dale Baird's all-time record, which of course would eventually be equaled on Friday afternoon. You woke up that morning, Friday morning, with two runners entered. You had one at Saratoga and one later that afternoon at Ellis Park. Walk me through your day. What was the vibe like around the barn that morning and throughout the day?
Well, I think it was just one of those things that we were kind of just, you know, we didn't expect to win two races that day. It just, Jalen's journey just ran an incredible race at Saratoga. It's nice to see him back on track. And then when the horse ran at Ellis for Mr. McCarty, it's just one of those things that you weren't sure where it was going to happen or when it was going to happen, but it was nice that it came around to the horse of Winchell's the following day. Stellar Tap, who won the maiden special weight, and you really couldn't have scripted it any better.
So often in sports, when an athlete gets close to a milestone like this or to breaking a record, they kind of, it gets in their head almost, and they get into a little bit of a slump, and it takes them a little while to do it. Like you said, you didn't wake up thinking you were going to win two races last Friday to equal the record, but you did. There was no slump with the Asmussen barn. Was this something, Scott, that was kind of weighing on the barn as you were getting closer, or was it just, hey, we're going to take it as it comes?
I think we just kind of take it as it comes. You have good days, you have bad days. Getting to the record, you knew you were eventually going to do it. It's just, there was no reason to try to put any more pressure on it than there already was. You knew it was going to happen. It just, you weren't sure when.
I mentioned at the beginning of the show how integral a part you have been of this run and of this operation over the years. 2.5 decades is a long time to be associated with anybody and to spend at any one job. And it's become a family atmosphere with the Steve Asmussen barn, and you're certainly a major part of that. When you hear the words all-time leading trainer in the history of thoroughbred racing, what goes through your mind?
Well, for me, I mean, I know, we have an amazing team put together and everything, but this is more of a personal record for Steve. I mean, I understand everything that myself, Darren, Toby, Mitch, Pablo, everybody that you know, how much they put into it. But for somebody to run an organization like this and to win that many races in a relatively short period of time, I mean, it's a lot. And it says a lot about him. I know Steve's great about giving us a lot of credit, but this record to me is, it's him and his willingness to manage that number of horses and how much he loves that. And my hat's off to him because most people wouldn't want to do it.
What is it about Steve Asmussen that has allowed him to have this kind of success?
Well, I mean, number one, he's highly intelligent. He's got an incredible memory. He eats, he lives this. This is his life. He's not a drinker. He doesn't go out and party. This is what he does. So, like I said, for him to accomplish this and, he's about horses and he's about his family, and that's about it.
I know at this go ahead.
It's just an incredible accomplishment on his part.
Yeah, it really is. And I know at this point, Scott, in your relationship that, you're working for him. He is the boss. He runs the operation. But, you're at the point where you're working with him, not for him necessarily. And it's a partnership. And yes, this is an individual accomplishment for Steve for the reasons you just pointed out. What kind of person is Steve to work for?
Well, I mean, anybody that's worked for him will tell you he's highly demanding. And, he expects a lot out of all of us. But, how long I've been there, how long Darren's been there, how long Toby's been there, Mitch has worked for him for a long time. Pablo's worked for him longer than all of us. He's got the same help around the country. And to me, that says, as demanding as he is, he pays well. And he's been generous with me, and he's, believe me, not every day is easy. It's not everything always goes right. So how you handle those situations say a lot about who you are.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Tell me a little bit more about Darren, Toby, Mitch, and Pablo. You mentioned their names a couple of times. Tell me more about the team.
Well, Darren runs like the Southwest division. Darren does it all. He'll pick up and travel wherever you need him to travel at a moment's notice. And he's an incredible horseman. Same thing, just knows the program, been there for a long time, and knows what's expected. Toby's in New York year round. Allows us to keep that barn open. Same thing, just worked for us for a long time. Very, very good horseman. And, Pablo, he's a man of few words. He doesn't say too much, but there's nobody better at it than him as well. So Mitch is in Monmouth right now. Mitch is very organized, very good horseman, and he's a tremendous amount of help to us with our HTV program, and it goes above and beyond.
How about you? How about your responsibilities every day? How do you view yourself as part of that team?
You know, I'm fortunate to get. I've been lucky to be able to be around some of our best horses, and because of where I end up going, and you know, those guys did a lot of work to get those horses to, you know, to if they're standing in the barn at Saratoga, you know, you're probably pretty special. So I've been fortunate to, you know, be able to be around some tremendous talent.
Let's go back to the two wins, the record-equaling win, the record-breaking win. Shanghai's Dream at Ellis Park equals the record on Friday in the sixth race with that victory under Rafael Bejarano. Where were you watching the race? What was going through your mind as you're watching Shanghai's Dream?
I actually watched it on my phone back at the barn because we had won our race, and then I'd gone back to the barn to do some stuff and finish up my charts so I just watched it on my phone.
How about Stand Up Tap?
You know, was very excited. Called Darren. That was awesome to do it for Mr. McCarty. That was great.
Yeah, it's so cool. How about Stellar Tap? Tell me about watching that one.
Stellar Tap, he's a 2-year-old that we thought a lot of, and he was broke down in Laredo. He'd just been through our program, and I think breaking the record, it was a pretty special performance by him. You know, first time out 7/8 at Saratoga, that's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, for him to win like that and break the record and the Winchells were there, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that. And look, it wasn't like Stellar Tap was 1-9, right? I think he went off at 5-1. So, this was all Stellar Tap. I know that you and the team and went through the program and you prepared them, but this was all Stellar Tap on the day, wasn't it?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's like any Saratoga maiden special weight. You know, you bring these babies up here and stuff, and you absolutely love them going into the race, and then you open up the form and you're like, wow, everybody else loves theirs too. So it's these are really competitive races, and they don't give you any of them. So it was a pretty awesome performance by him.
Steve was quoted after the race as saying, "For this to unfold on Whitney Day at Saratoga with a 2-year-old that came through Mom and Dad's program in Laredo and is co-owned by the Winchells, God is great, and He continues to bless us." How special was it to break the record for a horse wearing those Winchell silks?
Well, we're honest. I mean, there are no words for him. He's been so supportive and gracious to us over the years. And, it's just hard to find a better person to work for than Ron Winchell. And longtime clients, believes in us, believes in what we're doing. And, like I said, there's just not enough words of gratitude towards Ron Winchell. He's a superstar.
I can remember vividly watching Stellar Tap come down the stretch. Obviously, it wasn't that long ago, but my memory isn't what it used to be. But that's a moment I'm never going to forget. And, Scott, I can remember Stellar Tap coming down the stretch on Saturday. And in those Winchell silks, I was thinking, my goodness, I wonder how many of the 9,446 wins have been with horses wearing those silks. It's been a remarkable relationship, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it really has. From the time, that his father, who we worked for, Vern Winchell, when he passed away and Ron took over. And I mean, not only did he take over, what he's done in racing and breeding wise, he stood Tappet. He has Gunrunner now. I mean, he's just been a very important part of our industry, historical part of our industry.
And there's no doubt about it. Talking with Scott Blasi, longtime assistant trainer to Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. Steve, now the all-time leading trainer by number of wins in thoroughbred racing history. I noticed that he's not the all-time leader in terms of earnings. He's actually second, about $50 million behind fellow Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher. Do we start the earnings watch now too?
I don't know. These records and stuff, it's funny. You just, for me, you're going to show up and go to work, and, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. We've been blessed to have some great years and having another good one this year. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but it doesn't look like Todd's sitting back on his heels any, so that might be a little hard to get to right now.
It's, you know, it's interesting because and I'll bring up other sports again, but in other sports, we often talk about records that are untouchable. Nobody's ever going to break that record. And inevitably, Scott, it seems like somebody does come along eventually, and like Steve has done now with Dale Baird, they eventually catch them and they surpass them. Steve still has a lot of wins left in him. Do you see this record being so high when Steve finally hangs them up that nobody will ever break it?
Well, the fact that he's 55 years old, I mean, that's still pretty young as far as trainers go. And
yep.
Yeah, there's who knows how many by the time he decides he doesn't want to do this anymore. But, you know, I just don't ever see him at a point where he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, I think like most of the old-time great horse trainers, they kind of do it right up until the day that they die, and it's a passion, and it's all they know. And that's the other thing, Scott, and I'm sure you're cut from the same cloth, that the great trainers I've talked to over the years on this program, the one thing they all have in common is that their life is horses and horse racing and this game. They don't really do much else outside of racing.
Yeah, I mean, especially to be into this operation, I mean, you're going to have to be pretty dedicated, and, you know, it's pretty much a life choice. There's no halfway of doing things when it comes to taking care of this quality of horses.
Does Steve ever take a vacation?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Steve?
I try to take a couple weeks in December, 10, 12 days.
You do, and you get away a little bit. Does Steve ever take one?
He does, but he doesn't like them. He's the only guy I know who came back early from Hawaii.
That's dedication.
It's something. I like my 12 days. Kind of got to clear your head a little bit every now and then.
Where do you like to go when you're not at the racetrack? What other things do you enjoy doing?
Well, I started playing golf terribly during the pandemic, so I got that going for me. I started playing a little golf with my friends, and I don't know. I like the boat. I like to fish. I like to, you know, I like to try to have a little bit of a life every now and then.
What's your favorite vacation spot?
I'm kind of a fan of the Bahamas because I do so much traveling during the year. It's really easy to get to, and they have a lot to do there. So
yeah,
I don't want to get on an airplane and fly a long way somewhere. I get enough of that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That's not a bad choice to hang out in the Bahamas for a few days. I'm going to ask you about another person who has been a big part of this team and a big part of this run, and that's Ricardo Santana Jr., who was aboard. Who's aboard your milestone winner. To be riding for Steve and his family for so long, I feel they are part of my family now. They have taught me so much about racing. I dreamed about doing this ever since he tied the record yesterday. That was Ricardo's quote after breaking the record. Tell me about Ricardo. What has he meant to the success of the Asmussen operation?
You know, Ricardo's just a tremendous talent, and he's a very strong rider and a very smart rider. And, you know, I'm not sure how many years he's been riding this horse now, but he was a young kid. And, you know, Steve's not necessarily easy to ride for. So, you know, he had the ability to listen to Steve and to learn from what he was saying. And, you know, I think with that and being able to ride quality horses will take you to a different level. And I think Ricardo's there.
You say Steve is not necessarily the easiest trainer to ride for. How come?
I mean, he just wants things to go right. And, you know, he's particular. He likes his horses to get out of the gate and get, you know, positioned well. He just expects a lot out of everybody. He expects them to ride a good race, and that doesn't happen all the time. And I think it's one of those things he wants people to learn from their mistakes.
Trainer Scott Blasi with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Scott, you are not the only Blasi to have a hand in the 9,446 win milestone. Of course, that total even higher now, but you're not the only Blasi to be there with Steve. Tell me more about that story.
Well, my brother worked for Steve as an assistant before I ever, that's how I met Steve, was through Greg. And, you know, they were leading trainer together a couple times at Remington Park, and Greg worked for him in Houston, and, you know, then went out on his own for a while. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Steve knows my family very well. You know, he's very nice to my parents, and it's a, you know, you work for somebody for 25 years, you do. It's almost like a marriage.
You know, you first joined me on this show, Trainer Talk. I don't even know if you remember this, Scott, but it was January 2nd of 2013, 8 years ago, that we had a chance to talk here on this show. And one of the things you told me was that you were taking a break from college and you went to work for your brother Greg after he had finished working with Steve. He was training on his own, and you went to work for him. Do you ever wonder where you would be in your life now had you stayed in school?
Had I done what?
Had you stayed in college and not taken that break from college, do you ever wonder where you might be today?
You know, I got accepted into vet school twice, and I didn't want to do it. I was at that time I was paying for my own school and stuff, and I you know, I was just tired of being broke. I missed the horses, and honestly, I don't really have any regrets of not going on to vet school.
Yeah, things have worked out pretty darn well for you, and I can't even imagine where, you know, you would probably be a veterinarian somewhere, I would imagine, doing, you know, your job at the racetrack or elsewhere. And it's just hard to picture, after 25 years now, Scott Blasi not being part of this sport. It's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, it's been very good to me. And like I said, I've been so fortunate to be around so many great horses. So,
you know, if you were a vet, you'd probably get more time to fish down in the Bahamas.
Yeah. The best fishing's in Louisiana, so I'm okay. The best fishing is in Delacroix, Louisiana, which is about 30 minutes from New Orleans.
Really? You got your own little honey hole down there?
No, I got a guy I go with that has a honey hole, and he owns the boat. So that's the best of both worlds.
That's even better.
He likes a few gambling tips every now and then.
That sounds like a fair trade to me. What do you fish for when you go down?
Down there, it's redfish and speckled trout.
Wow.
It's a lot of fun.
Wow, I didn't realize they had trout in Louisiana.
They do. They're awesome.
Yeah, I grew up trout fishing in the Northeast in New York and Massachusetts and that part of the country. There's a lot of great trout fishing up there. You should try that next time, you know, when you're up there in Saratoga, and if you get a little break, a day off, you should go do some trout fishing up there.
Yeah, that's the problem with Saratoga. There's not many breaks.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's nonstop. You know, when you first started working with Steve, things were a whole lot different than they are today. You were both galloping horses, and I remember you telling me once that you both ate yourself out of that job. Yeah. But it was different, right?
Well, I mean, it was just, we were a smaller operation, and you had to, you know, we just did things ourselves as we expanded, and there were, you know, more things to do. It's hard to run it when I was on the back of a horse galloping, because I couldn't see everything else that was going on.
Yeah, the job itself, training horses for a living, we say it all the time, right, Scott? It has the highest highs and the lowest lows and ups and downs, and it's a roller coaster. I'm sure it still is today. There's still things that you have to overcome. But talk about some of the early days of that Blasey-Asmussen relationship and some of the things that, you had to deal with some of the early struggles as you were growing.
Well, I mean, I remember riding in the back of a horse van to Ocala with Ballot Expectations, and then riding in the back of a van with him to New York. I mean, it wasn't like now when I call up Delta and book a flight. it was just different. We were just trying to make it work. We weren't it's not like anybody was killing it back then. So, you know, we got a couple big breaks when we went down to New Orleans. Bobby Barnett at the time was training for John Franks, and Bobby was going to go to Oakland and leave New Orleans, and Mr. Franks left all the Louisiana breads in New Orleans with us, and that was a really big break for us at the time.
Well, it's an interesting point, too, because people see Steve Asmussen today, and they see the classic victories and the Breeders' Cup wins and all of the big wins that you're part of. They don't realize that, you know, a lot of those 9,000-plus wins came with horses that were competing at lower levels, and that's how it all got started.
Oh, for sure. And, that, you know, that's I'm actually really proud of that because – I mean, and I'm very proud of how our, like even our claiming horses, how they look and how they're presented in the paddock. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a grade one winner or, you know, a $5,000 claimer. I'm always very proud of how our horses look when they walk into the paddock.
We have a call-in show every Thursday night on the network, and people call in from all over the country to talk racing with us. And I had the privilege of sitting in on that show. I haven't done it in a long time since I launched the show 10, 12 years ago, but I had to fill in the other night, and it was so cool to be able to talk racing with our listeners. But one listener asked about the Hall of Fame, and we got talking about Dale Baird and should he be a member of the Hall of Fame because he's currently not. And we talked about the fact that, you know, look, he didn't have the big wins. A lot of his wins came in lower-level races at lower-level tracks, but you know, you can say the same thing about Steve Asmussen. He just had the fortune of winning a lot of the big races, too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's done it at every level and still continues to do so. But at the same time, to be able to provide that for our owners, to have different levels to run horses, it's a great advantage for them. I mean, if you have a horse that doesn't necessarily fit in Saratoga, that doesn't mean they're not made in special weight caliber at Remington Park. And, you know, these people have a lot of money invested in these horses, and to be able to get out of them, you know, as much as possible and to establish value, breeding value, you know, for mares, stallions, it's a good service that we can provide.
Yeah, it's a great point. Talking with Scott Blasey, assistant trainer for Steve Asmussen. Scott, stay with me. That was a quick moving 30 minutes. We're going to get to a short commercial break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up the second half of the show with another 25 or 30 minutes. And we'll look back on some of the top moments in the career of both Steve Asmussen and Scott Blasey. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This summer, Fasig Tipton celebrates the 100th renewal of the Saratoga Sale, the world's most prestigious auction of selected yearlings in a single catalog. A sale that has produced 100 years of Breed Shapers, Eclipse Champions, Classic Winners, and International Stars. Join us for the Sale of a Century, the 100th Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale, August 9th and 10th in Saratoga Springs, New York. Where will you be?
Consistent success tested over time. There is no better example than Millridge Farm. Founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler, this year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as Pillar of the Turf. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 36 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year. Millridge offers its largest and highest quality consignment ever at this year's Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale, with 9 yearlings by leading stallions and promising first-year sires. And will be showing at Barn 5 on Friday, August 6th. Millridge, standing the test of time. The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown prep series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Brigadier General and Stellar Tap, they are heads apart. They've got 4 lengths on Vodka Mardini, who is running in third. On the outside is Predicted. Immokalee now gains ground, coming through down at the rail. Farther back, it is Martini and the Moonshine. And then Keep Calm, Carry On, as the field comes off the turn and enters the stretch. And it is Stellar Tap who has the lead here over Brigadier General. Stellar Tap is in front as they come down for the eighth pole. Stellar Tap is the leader. Then Brigadier General and Immokalee. This is going to be a Saratoga memory for the ages with this victory by Stellar Tap. Steve Asmussen is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this edition, a very special one indeed, as I am visiting with trainer Scott Blasi, who has been the longtime assistant to the aforementioned Steve Asmussen. You heard his name there from John Embrial, the announcer at Saratoga. That is the way it sounded last Saturday when Stellar Tap gave Steve Asmussen the all-time record. Now 9,446 wins to his credit. That was at least at that point. He has now won other races too, so the total continues to grow. As Scott mentioned in the first half of the show, he is only 55 years old. There is a lot of great training opportunities ahead for Steve Asmussen and for the team, and what a ride it has been. I'll continue talking with Scott momentarily right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of this edition of Trainer Talk or any of our shows, head over to horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Well, Scott, that call, just a little trip down memory lane. I know we touched on we talked about the race in depth in the first half of the program, but as you're listening to it there, one more time, what was going through your mind?
Well, it's just a pretty special moment. There's it's funny when the horse came back, and the only other time I've ever turned around when the crowd was, you know, standing ovation was when Rachel Alexander was coming back after the Woodward at Saratoga, I thought the neat part about that win was when I actually turned around and watched Steve and the family, walking through the aisle to come down to get in the win circle, and everybody was up giving him a standing ovation. So I thought it was a pretty special moment that the crowd reacted the way they did.
Yeah, it's a great
point. for everybody in those box seats to stand up and as he was walking through the grandstand, it was a pretty memorable experience.
Yeah, what a great point that is, and a wonderful picture to paint, too. And watching it on television, they had the cameras on Steve and on his family. They're sitting there in the box, and, of course, the minute the horse crossed the finish line, there were hugs and kisses, and it was a beautiful scene. And then to hear you describe what it was like afterwards and watching this person that has meant so much to you and to your family and to your life and your career, gosh, what a special moment that was, and I'm so happy for you and for the team, Scott. You know, one thing we were talking about, too, as we were wrapping up the first half of the program, we were talking about Dale Baird and a guy who, you know, had so much success but didn't have it on the big stage like you and Steve and the team have had. Should Dale Baird be a member of the Horse Racing Hall of Fame? Is that many wins enough to get him into the Hall of Fame?
Well, the problem is horse trainers don't get a vote. So I think if you ask a horse trainer or anybody that's in this industry that knows how hard it was to do that, I mean, I would say yes. But as far as, you know, who votes on who gets into the Hall of Fame and what's required of that is, you know, we don't have any control over that. But me as a horse trainer, me as a horseman, yes, I do think he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah, I would certainly agree with that, too. I think if you dedicate your life to this sport and you have that kind of success, regardless of what level it was at, yeah, you deserve – that's greatness, and we should celebrate that greatness
by having him in the
Hall of Fame.
I can at least have an opinion on it because I was involved in winning 9,446 races, but and it's not an easy thing to do. It's a monumental thing to do, so – you know, I do think he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
I'm going to ask you about this too, Scott, because we talked about the fact that Steve has meant a lot to you and to your career and to your family. You were wonderful in talking about that in the first half of the program, and you're not all that far removed. I guess it was, 7 or 8 years ago when you were under fire for the PETA video that was investigated and all that kind of stuff. And Steve had to let you go. And then, that was very reluctant on his part, but then he brought you back 4 months later saying that the operation is better when you are there. What does it mean knowing that Steve had your back and stood by you during that very difficult time?
Well, I mean, regardless of what happened, Steve and I were very close, and we had to let that unfold as it did. And, you know, at the end of the day, we came out better for it. And, you know, at the end of the day, you couldn't have looked at our operation any harder than two racing commissions looked at our operation. And, you know, at the end of the day, it probably made us look better other than I have a foul mouth. But, you know,
I'm sure you're not the first.
Right. I'm a shocker horse trainer with a foul mouth. That was a very hard thing to go through personally. But it was, you know, you find out who your friends are. So, you know, it's just something we got through, and we're better for it afterwards.
Yeah. I had told a lot of people that, you know, my opinion on it. I came out publicly on the radio and stated my case, but that had to be the longest 4 months of your life.
Yeah. I went home to my brother's ranch. You know, we had some, you know, I just took some personal time. It was actually really, looking back on it, as hard as it was to go through, it was actually pretty good for me.
Well, and now to see where you guys stand today, I'm glad that it all came together and that, you know, things were put in the rearview mirror and now we move forward. And because, you know, Steve would be the first to admit that the team, the family, it's all critical to his success.
Yeah, it's if you don't have that relationship, it'd be hard to do what we do.
When you think back on all of the things that you have accomplished since working with Steve, when you first went to work with him, you know, 2.5 decades ago, what are some of the moments, Scott, that are going to stand out to you, whether it's a personal moment or a race or a horse? What are some of the things that are going to stand out to you?
I mean, you know, probably when the Curlin won the Preakness, that was our first Triple Crown win. That was a pretty amazing feeling. You know, any time you can win Breeders' Cup races or Dubai World Cups or, you know, that effort horses like Midnight Bazoo, you know, put out in the Pegasus, or not the Pegasus, but the Saudi Cup.
Yeah.
You know, Gunrunner winning the Pegasus. It's just not so much about the money as it is the effort that those horses give you. And to be able to get, you know, such quality races out of you know, horses like Gunrunner and Curlin and Rachel and Midnight Bazoo and Untapped, to watch those careers come together and be able to maintain that at a high level over a period of time is something that, you know, we're very proud of.
I will never forget hosting the radio coverage of Rachel when she beat the boys in the Woodward, and we were positioned out back by the paddock at that time. There was a shoeboard outside the racing office facing the paddock, and that's where we had our table set up. And I remember it vividly to this day, Scott. It was like I could feel the ground shaking underneath me when she was coming down to the line. It was such an unbelievable thing to be part of.
Yeah, it was a, you know, she was an unbelievable talent, and for her to do it the way she had to do it that day was just, you know, it'll be something I'll never forget.
What are some of the greatest performances that you have witnessed with the horses that you guys have trained? Certainly Rachel would be right up there, and you mentioned the Preakness win. There would be others, I'm sure. What are some of the greatest performances that come to mind?
You know, I think Gunrunner's performance in the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Pegasus, you know, I think those were performances that kind of made your hair stand up on your arm. You know, Curlin in the Dubai World Cup, I mean, nobody could have beat that horse that day. It was just, he was just so dominating. And there's just so many. Untappable, Midnight Bazoo. There's been so many good horses that make you feel like no other sport will make you feel.
How about on the flip side of that? Is there a horse or horses or a race that, boy, if you could do it over again, I'd like to have one more shot at that one? We should have won it.
You know, I think a horse like Tis Wonderful, you know, that was such an amazing talent that got hurt. Like it's stuff like that that I know that was really there, you know, that they didn't get to become who I knew they were. You know, that's the hardest part about racing for me, when something happens that's, you know, not really controllable and they can't go on to be who they should be.
That's a wonderful point. Yeah, it makes sense. You know, a horse has ability, and for whatever reason, they just don't get the opportunity to show it. I'm sure that happens more than we even know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard when they get hurt, and it's hard, you know, things are going to happen that you don't have control over, and it's that's the hardest part about this business, is anybody that doesn't know.
What do you think you're most proud of, Scott, with everything that you and the team have accomplished?
Probably this win record. I'm very proud of it. I'm just very, you know, there's a lot of stuff we'd still like to do, and hopefully we're not done. Hopefully there's a derby out there with our name on it. But if it happens, yeah, it happens. Trying to force it's not going to help.
Yeah, why is that such a difficult race to win, man? You guys have been so close.
Yeah, I don't. The Derby's just tough. It's an event. It's more so than a horse race, I think. I mean, it's the only time they run against 20 horses, and you know, where you draw and has so much to do with the outcome of that race. And you know, like you said, we've been close, but would still like to get it done, that's for sure.
All right, let me ask you this question. The most disappointing of these Derby efforts, because you thought you could do it. Looking at Lee, Nero. Both of those horses were second in their respective Kentucky Derbies. And I know you know all of this. You could rattle through them. Gunrunner, who was third in 2016. Curlin, who was third in 2007. Which one stings the most?
Curlin, for sure. 100% Curlin. I didn't think he could lose.
Really?
The Derby. Yeah, I thought he was. I thought there was no shot of him getting beat in the Derby. And he just drew the two hole. He got covered up, found himself in a position that he'd never been before. And, he ranged up and ran third. But, like, the horse, that's why we ran back in the Preakness, because the horse in the test barn, he wasn't even, I mean, you couldn't even hardly walk. He didn't run. So,
wow.
That's probably as disappointed in a major race as I've ever been.
No, I can imagine. Yeah, that's got to be tough, and a tough one to get past. And you have to think that someday there is one with your name on it, and it would be wonderful to see. Visiting with Scott Blasi, who is the longtime assistant trainer to Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. If you haven't heard, the all-time wins leader in the history of thoroughbred racing as of this past Saturday, surpassing Dale Baird. You mentioned, Scott, in the first half of the program, all the travel that you have gotten to do with this job. What are some of the places that you've really enjoyed going to and some of the racetracks that you've gotten to visit?
You know, I love California when I was out there, Del Mar. Saratoga's hard to beat. The level of racing and the competitiveness here is just second to none. Churchill is probably one of my favorite tracks to run at, just because it's kind of home for me and I have family around there. And, I love New Orleans too. It's just, I've been lucky. I've got to go places. And somebody from Independence, Kansas, you wouldn't think would ever have a shot of going. So it's, to go to Saudi, I've been to Dubai 7 times. It's just, I've got to do things on the code of horsetails that most people would never see.
What's the one place you would like to go to? Maybe it's an international venue that you haven't been to yet.
I would like to go to Ascot one time. Japan. I would go to Japan too. I think it'd be a good experience. It's just, Ascot's just, for us, it's such a busy time of year, and it never really has fit into the cards, you know. I mean, we've had precocious 2-year-olds that you would think about doing it with, but it just has never worked out.
Yeah, it has to be a whole different strategy, right, and game plan when you're mapping out a schedule for those youngsters if you're going to try and get them to Ascot, right?
Yes, and I mean, I remember when, I think we won 8 2-year-old races at Keeneland one meet, and a bunch of them were Mr. Hylick Bros, and we had talked about it. And but then you got horses like, we had horses like Curlin in the barn and the Pyro, and it doesn't really ever seem to work out for us to do that, but maybe someday.
I loved what you brought up at the end of the first half of the program too, and I want to go back to that for a second. When you were talking about the importance of making stallions, and that's something that a lot of people listening might not know how important that is when you're training racehorses. That is always in the forefront of a lot of the decision making that you have to go through when you're picking spots and when you're mapping out a schedule and getting a horse ready for a certain race. You have to be thinking about, how can I make this horse more valuable as a stallion or even as a broodmare? Is that right?
Oh, for sure. And that's one thing that Steve's so great at, his placement knowing the value and what level that they can compete at is so important. When you have, we're very fortunate because, like Gunrunner, for example, he's not winning at just like at Lone Star or, Indiana Downs. He's having major winners, at Del Mar and Saratoga and Churchill. And, but the, you know, to be able to make the most of his progeny, like Mr. Winchell owns, and we've done it for Bill Heiligbroe, you know, to be able to place those babies, 2-3-year-olds, where they need to be and where they can compete and win is a big thing for the people that own the stallions.
When you go to purchase a youngster at a sale, and you and Steve, or Steve maybe is working the sale, I don't know if you work the sale together, but you start talking about some of those youngsters, do you put special emphasis on the ones that are by Curlin or that are by Gunrunner and the horses, the sires that you know? Does that ever enter into it?
Well, Steve works the sales really hard. That's his thing. And, you know, I think he definitely, it comes into play. I mean, I think you want to support the people that support you. So if you see, a very athletic Gunrunner or a very athletic Tappet, Curlin, absolutely. You're going to be definitely be in line to get them. So I think Steve's done a great job at that, and I think our owners have done a great job at putting, when they've had young stallions, and putting the athletes in our barn that they like. So it's been a great relationship with a lot of people. Stone Street, Mr. Heiligbroe, Ron Winchell, that they've been so supportive of us over the years. It's nice to be able to repay them, so. Hopefully we can continue that success.
That's the other cool thing about this sport, Scott, that even when they leave your barn and they retire from racing, whether they become a broodmare or they go on to a stallion career, you're always following those horses, aren't you?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the Mattolis have yearlings this year, so I'm looking forward to seeing some of those, so. The best time of the year for me is when all the babies start coming in. It's very exciting, and it's just nice to see who's who.
How long does it take you, and I ask this question a lot on this show because I think it's fascinating when I get some different answers, how long does it take you to realize when you get a young horse into your barn, how long does it take you to know if they have what it takes to be a superstar, let's say, or a really good racehorse?
Well, some of them just develop so differently, you know. Just a lot of it depends on their breeding and if they're going to run long or they're going to run short. But it's, it's really easy to be wrong. So I don't get too opinionated until I see them run.
Yeah, probably a smart strategy. Scott Blasey here on Trainer
Love,
Talk.
You can love how they're doing. You can love who they are, but they still got to do it on the racetrack.
Scott, if I were to go inside your house and I were to see what kind of memorabilia you might have laying around, maybe pictures or saddle towels or trophies, whatever it is, what kind of things am I going to see that will let me know that you have been a major part of this 9,446 win record?
Well, it's funny. My condo in Louisville doesn't really have there's not enough room anymore. So I need a bigger house, I think. That two bedroom condo is not going to hold all that memorabilia. But I don't know. That, you know, Curlin's World Cup blanket's really special to me. There's so many good memories. The Breeders' Cups, Preakness, World Cup. We've had so many.
Seems like maybe we lost Scott there, his connection.
Are you there?
There we go. Now we've got him back. Yeah, it sounded like your connection was done. You said Curlin's World Cup blanket was really special.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a cool. It's such a neat blanket, and the Eclipse Award that when Steve won his first Eclipse Award, the second one he won, when Darren and I were there, he had each of us one made.
Oh, wow.
He said the first one was for him. The second one was for me and Darren. And that was a pretty special thing for him to do on a national stage.
Wow, fantastic.
I'd say that's, you know, that and the, he gave me the watch, the trainer's watch from when Gunrunner won the Classic.
Just amazing. What a relationship and what a ride.
As far as memorabilia goes, that's probably three of my favorite things.
Yeah, I can certainly see why. What do you think Steve would say if I asked him what his most cherished possession was, racing related?
I don't know. Maybe I would have to say the Eclipse Awards and the gold whip from Dubai. I don't know. It's hard to say. He's got a lot of stuff.
That plaque across the street from the racetrack in Saratoga Springs is pretty special too.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
Man.
That's not bad.
We could go on all day talking about those accolades. It's just been incredible. And Scott, I know that you cherish this record as much as Steve does, and you should. It's been a wonderful relationship and a great ride, and all the best moving forward. I know there's a lot of big wins left in your future and Steve's future and the whole team with Asmussen Racing. Keep up the wonderful work, and congratulations again on all the success. And can't thank you enough for spending some time with me here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, buddy. That's Scott Blasi, the assistant trainer for Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. And, yeah, what, you know, just think about the numbers. Okay, 9,446 wins. The number is even higher now, and that's remarkable in itself. A lot of people thought Dale Baird's mark of 9,445 would never be equaled, and now we're going to be talking about, will Steve Asmussen's mark ever be equal? He's going to set that number so high. And who knows? Maybe a guy like Todd Pletcher can come get him. But they're both going to be winning races together over the course of the next several years. They're both young men, and they're both going to continue to win. So it's going to be hard to really close any ground on Steve Asmussen and the team. Just wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff from Scott Blasi today. My thanks to him for taking time again. It was great to hear his story and kind of a different side of this record-setting milestone. If you missed any portion of the show, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our trainer talk shows at your leisure. For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for my special guest, Scott Blasi, I'm Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next week on an all-new trainer talk presented by Faisig Tipton. Thanks for listening, everyone.